after the presentation.
All right. Honourable members, we've had a short break. This is still a continuation of our meeting of this morning. We are about to receive a report from South African Health Products Regulatory Authority. We have on the annual performance report, and we have on the platform, we have the chairperson of the board, Professor Ellen Rees, and we have the CEO, Dr. Tumi Semete, and they probably have some other members with them from the board, their CFO, etc. We will continue where we had left off. I'm not going to read the rules again because it's still the same meeting, which we are, as I mentioned, we are continuing with. I will hand over to Professor Rees to make some remarks and to introduce the team. And we'll go straight to the presentation. I see that Dr. Semete has already been made a co-host. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, she's Dr. Semete is with us. Dr. Jacobs, honourable colleagues, thank you very much for this invitation. We look forward to having discussions with you, and I know that our discussions are always quite probing, and we appreciate that. I will introduce at the end the other board members, and I'll ask Dr. Semete to introduce her colleagues. But perhaps just by way of introduction, on this occasion, I was reflecting back to the first time that as the SAHPRA board and the executive team came to Parliament in those days, pre-COVID in person, you gave us a real grilling because we had qualified audits. We had a host of things that needed to be done. And I think that this time round, I really do want to acknowledge the work of Dr. Semete, her team, and my fellow board members as well, because they've achieved the World Health Organization rating of what's called maturity level 3 for vaccines, and for one aspect, maturity level 4, and 4 being the top. But Dr. Semete will explain this more to you. But that is a real recognition from the World Health Organization that we have a competent functioning regulatory authority. And it also is going to give us the status to really support the ambition of having vaccine manufacturing, for example, and pharmaceutical manufacturing in the country. But it also tells us we have reached a benchmark, which is very good, and we can talk more about that. The second thing is that we've got an unqualified audit. Indeed, there were, as you'll see in the presentation, there were things to be corrected and done. And to the CFO and his team, I think that this was again a real achievement from just a very few years ago when we came that first time. And then the backlog, which we talked with you about many times, we're now 99.5% through that backlog. We hope to finish it at the end of this year, and that will be a huge breakthrough. That's the good news. The bad news would be we don't want to create another backlog. So these are the things that we can talk more with you about. I also want to just acknowledge that Dr. Semete and her executive team and the whole team were awarded from Science and Innovation a top management award, because they really have been outstanding, and it was particularly for their work during COVID. And so I want to also acknowledge that I think SAHPRA has functioned extremely well during COVID and has made some very significant, really did things in a very disciplined way. And in some cases, I would say really outstripped some of the very well-resourced Global North regulatory authorities and the way they went about their business and the decisions made. So again, a breakthrough. But clearly, you'll see in the presentation, we're not 100%. We're not green in everything, and we'll have that discussion. So if I may introduce my colleagues who are here, I'll introduce Dr. Semete last, and she'll introduce her colleagues. So we have Mr. Taba, who is a board member, and she is chairing our HR REMCO committee. We have Hanley Mayer, who is a board member, but also chairs the the ministerial committee that looks at vaccine safety reports as well. Just hoping I don't miss. So we have Joyce, who is Joyce Soka Gwegweni, who is a member of the board, Mandisa Tlengwa, Mandisa Skosana, who's a member of the board. Obakeng Masondo Obasankawole, who is the deputy chairperson. We have Patrick Mana, who is a board member as well. Lani Ngobesi, who is a board member who is appointed to the board for governance reasons. Zintle Makatini, who is a member of the board, appointed the board in her capacity as a senior laboratory scientist, but with a lot of knowledge in this field. I hope I haven't missed others out. So we have a number of board members. I'm sure others will join us. And I'll ask Dr. Simete to take over and introduce her colleagues. Thank you.
And then, shall I say, Itanie?
Oh, sorry, Itanie, did I miss you?
Yeah, sorry, I'm using my son's laptop.
So this is Michelle, who is the chair of what we call the Technical Operations and Regulatory Science Committee. It's a board committee, a pharmacist by background, but that committee looks at all of the technical outputs of the board and oversees the strategy in terms of the technical component of SAPRA. Thank you very much. I'll hand over now to Dr. Simete. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Prof. Lees. Good afternoon, members, and thank you for making the time to engage with us on our 2021-2022 performance report. I'll introduce my colleagues, and if they can maybe just have their cameras on, just so you see who is the team that's been supported by the board in executing the regulatory function. I've got our CRO, Chief Regulatory Officer, Ms. Poshang Gambule. I have our CFO, Mr. Rachat Khos. I have our Executive for HR, Mr. Gordon Takati.
Thank you, CEO. I'm low-chatted.
No worries. Thanks, Gordon. And our COO, Ms. Kristalna Reinecker, there she is, as well as our board secretary, Ms. Nazreen. Great, thank you. Thank you. Chair, that's the SAPRA team.
Thank you. You can please continue with your presentation.
If I may just introduce Lerato Matai as well, a board member who chairs both the Governance and the Finance Committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, members, thank you for seeing us and meeting with us this afternoon. So as I've mentioned, we're going to be giving an update on the 2021-2022 financial year. So that is the prior financial year. We're going to go into quite a bit of detail in terms of the environment that we are operating in terms of our response to COVID and how we supported the country in this regard. We'll go into a bit of a deep dive into how we have performed in the respective areas of the organization. Then we'll end off with an HR as well as a finance presentation. But before I can do that deep dive into the prior financial year, I think it will be remiss of us if we don't highlight these, and Prof. Rees has already shared these with yourselves, and some of you may have seen this in various reports and various media platforms. But we're quite thrilled to be able to have, since SAPRA was established about 4 years ago, to be able to have an unqualified audit opinion for the 2021-2022 financial year. And you know, this was really on the hard work that the team put together to make sure that from a governance perspective, we're compliant, we have the required internal control mechanisms to ensure that you can trust the information and the performance of SAPRA. In addition to receiving this unqualified audit opinion, we've also been ranked by the World Health Organization as having achieved a maturity level 3. And I'll spend some time in the coming slides in terms of what this means in the global context, but also in the context of, you know, the country and all the discussions that are happening around vaccine manufacturing on the continent. And more specifically for the lot release function, we got the highest maturity level, which is maturity level 4. And this speaks to the quality of our regulatory oversight for vaccines, not only COVID vaccines, but all vaccines that are available in the continent. We are the first regulator to achieve ML4 for the lot release function, and we are the second regulator on the continent to achieve ML3 for vaccine regulation. And as we are working on these areas, we've also focused a lot of our efforts on clearing the backlog. This is a backlog that the committee is quite familiar with. It's a backlog we inherited when SAPRA was established from the MCC. And as of September 2022, we're sitting at about 99.5%. And the intention is that we will complete this project by November. And again, a lot of hard work went into this. And I'll speak to that in a bit more detail later. But I would really like to commend the SAPRA board, commend the SAPRA staff. Some of them are not even here. Many of them are not even here, who have really rolled up their sleeves in this current financial year to ensure that we achieve these really excellent outcomes. We have spent time at the regulator just reflecting on who we are, what our mission is, and what our values are. And I just want to focus really on our vision. And you will see this come through quite a bit as we present, in that our vision is that we're an agile and a responsive African regulator. This was tested to the extreme, really, with COVID. We needed to ensure that we are responsive to this public health emergency, and that we also implement approaches that are agile, yet still of regulatory rigor, a strong regulatory rigor. We are an African health products regulator. We particularly highlight that because we acknowledge and really want to strengthen our role as a regulator on the African continent. And we're quite excited about the development with the African Medicines Agency. I understand that South Africa is quite close to signing and ratifying the treaty. And this is excellent for us because we can actively participate in the structure of the African Medicines Regulator, but also entrain, strengthen our role as we participate in the continent. We also want to be globally recognized, and this is demonstrated by having this maturity level outcome by the WHO, which then says that we're a credible regulator that then enables access to safe and effective health products. As I've mentioned, we've been in existence as SAPRA at the end of the 2021-2022 financial year. It had been our fourth year. So I'm really quite happy with our performance to date, considering where we come from, considering what we had to put in place. If you remember when SAPRA was established, we had to set up an HR team. We had to set up our own finance team, our own quality management team, all the support in essence. Everyone in our support function is relatively new, and we had to ensure that we strengthen the work we do in our regulatory function. And I'm quite happy indeed to be able to have achieved what we have in the 4 years. And I think better things are to come from SAPRA, and we're really heading in the right trajectory. And while we were doing all of that, we had to ensure that as a regulator, we support the national response to the pandemic. It was a very difficult time for all of us as regulators. It was a difficult time for all countries. We sat in positions wherein, you know, there was new information emerging almost at times, literally every day. And so we needed to ensure that we are decisive in making decisions, but also that our decisions needed to be evidence-based. And so it was important that we base our decisions on science. Again, as we made, we authorized vaccines, you know, some of them that were evaluated in the country, some not. We needed to make sure that we look at the scientific data that's been made available to us. We authorize on the basis of that data, but also to ensure that we continuously monitor any adverse events following immunization. And I'll go into a bit more detail also around that. We had to really be agile and develop a mechanism for emergency use authorization. When it comes to the maturity level three, there's about four levels, one and two indicating that, you know, there's still some gaps with your regulatory system, either, you know, there are some systems that are not in existence, indicating that some areas are partially implemented and that you are reactive in your approach. A number of us regulators across the world are striving to be maturity level three. And that means that you're a stable regulator, you are well functioning, and you have integrated regulatory systems. This is a maturity level of the bulk of regulators in the developed countries. And on the continent, we have this only for five regulators now with SAHPRA, some for medicines and some for vaccines. And as I said, for vaccines, we are one of the two. And the intention is that with time, one then strives to become maturity level four. But there aren't many that are at maturity level four. One that has been formally assessed by the WHO is Singapore. And for vaccines, they've been awarded the ML4 status. But you have other very strong regulators that have not even achieved maturity level four. So really, if you consider what this means at a global level, it's that we are among the best across the world. And what it says then, it says products that are made available in the country are compliant with quality, safety, and efficacy. But also it says as conversations are taking place and there's a lot of efforts and investment into vaccine manufacturing, that any vaccines that are manufactured in South Africa that would have a SAHPRA authorization that would be released by our control lab can therefore stand scrutiny when they're considered from a quality, safety, and efficacy. So these vaccines can be made available across the world. And this, again, is great not only for SAHPRA, but for the country as we are supporting all these manufacturing initiatives. With that context, we operated in a service delivery environment wherein we focused on health products registration. And we had to implement a priority review pathway for COVID-related products, but also we do have a priority review pathway for the priority health areas such as HIV and AIDS, tuberculosis, as well as oncology. We also worked very hard to ensure that we are able to reduce the timeframes, particularly under a public health emergency. We needed to ensure that we reduce the timeframes by being more efficient. We've put more resources to some of these programs, and that's how we were able to reduce the time. I've alluded to the backlog that we've implemented a number of re-engineered processes to ensure that we can reduce the backlog. And while we were able to achieve what we have, it's been a very challenging period for us from a financial perspective. I think we have indicated in the past that the allocation from the National Treasury continues to reduce. We are, yes, aware of the very difficult fiscus that we are in the country with a very tight fiscus. And while that is the case, I think it is important that the regulator is adequately capacitated so that we can ensure the quality and the safety of health products made available in the country. An important function that we oversee is what we call post-market surveillance. So this means that when the products are out in the market, we need to monitor them. This again is an area where we're undercapacitated. We need to ensure that, you know, as we apply these review pathways, such as reliance, et cetera, we strengthen this function. And I'll speak to this later, wherein I give you a sense of the amount of outreach and the amount of reports that we have seen wherein we were notified of falsified health products that we had to go and assess. And that is quite critical. And for vaccines, we needed to ensure that we strengthen our lot release function. We have implemented a med safety app, and this is what the public has been utilizing to report any adverse events following immunization. We have a page on our website where we report on these every 2 weeks. And we're not only using the app as a platform, there is a paper-based format for those areas wherein app usage is not as wide. And they can then report these adverse events following immunization through manual processes, and we would then still capture that. We needed to ensure that as a regulator, we work, you know, quite hard in ensuring that we communicate to the public, particularly around COVID-19 vaccines. And a number of you have seen us in a number of platforms wherein we were engaging the public. We must say that, you know, that the period of COVID has been quite challenging for us. There were times when our mandate was challenged through public protest or political pressure. But it's important, and we continue to say that as a regulator, we will make our decisions based on scientific evidence and nothing else. And if that data provided to us is not satisfactory, we will not concede to any pressure. And we've seen this work well for us, in that we were able to make decisions that would stand scrutiny, but also decisions that when you look at other regulators have made similar outcomes. So it's important that as a regulator, we really are protected, and that we are enabled to execute our mandate, which is very much around the safety, the quality, and the performance of health products. In this regard, we also faced a number of litigations that were brought against the regulator. And similarly, we have stood our ground to say we will make science-based decisions and make sure that whatever legal challenges we encounter do not disrupt our operations too much. We have, as Prof. Rees has indicated, a board that was appointed, a newly appointed board in September 2021. Some of the members are new members, and other members served in the inaugural board of SAPRA. So we do have quite a good complement of continuity and understanding of the regulator, but also quite a good complement of new ideas, new thoughts, et cetera, being brought into the SAPRA governance. And these are board members, and some of them have been introduced and are present with us today. As we consider the external environment and we work closely with our board, our staff members are quite critical. We need to ensure that we continue to set SAPRA as a high-performing organization. We've had a number of engagements with our team. We have a number of planning sessions, of strategic sessions, tactical planning sessions, wherein we really engage on the business of the regulator and say how we're going to execute our work. We also have been working quite hard to retain the talent that we have, but also to recruit new talent. We have been able to successfully transfer all the employees that were at the Department of Health under the MCC to be fully transferred to SAPRA. If I could just focus again on COVID, just some highlights around this. We were able to reduce the time that it takes for registration of vaccines from 20 months to 3 months. And how we were able to do that was through working long hours, but also redeploying some of our team members to support this area. We were able to conduct inspections in a hybrid and at times in a remote manner during the lockdown period when our inspectors were not able to travel. For those products that were unregistered, we were able to authorize those within the required time period. Clinical trials was also an important area. You are aware of a number of clinical trials that took place in the country, not only for vaccines, but for therapeutics. Some of the researchers in the country were part of global clinical trials, and SAPRA needed to ensure that we have regulatory oversight over those clinical trials. To date, we have authorized the Covishield vaccine, the Pfizer and Janssen. Those are the two that are currently available, but we've also authorized Sinovac, Sinopharm, as well as CoronaVac. We rejected Sputnik V on the basis of the lack of scientific data. We are currently reviewing Sputnik Light, and that's in process. We also are reviewing the pediatric formulation of the Pfizer vaccine. We've been able, as I've indicated, to support a number of clinical trials. We also have been able to, from an assessment of any adverse events following immunization, we've been able to do quite a lot of work to educate the public on that, to review the reports that we receive, and to do what we call causality assessments, and I'll speak to that quite soon. We also were able to register a number of antigen tests, of antibody tests, as well as molecular tests. These are the PCR tests. So all of the tests for COVID have had to go through SAHPRA for their authorization. We were not going to be able to do what we did if we worked in silos. We worked very closely with many partners, with many regulators across the continent. We participated in workshops that were hosted by the WHO. They invited some of our members to be part of a collaborative review process. We are also a member of the biggest association of regulators across the world, being the International Coalition of Medicine Regulatory Authorities. We are one of the two African countries that are part of this. And this is where we really meet and we engage on the pertinent regulatory matters. We also play a very active role on a number of initiatives on the continent, such as the African Vaccine Regulatory Forum. So I'll now deep dive into our performance and to say that in the last financial year, so this is 21-22, we were able to achieve 65% of our targets, and we could not achieve 9%, and our 35%. I'll talk to why we didn't achieve those. From a what we call Program 1, which is where our leadership and our support function sit, we were able to meet our target for revenue. Digitization remains to be an important element. And again, this is an area that does need quite a significant amount of resourcing. And we have not been able to successfully secure funding from National Treasury for our digitization efforts. And we've subsequently have engaged with other stakeholders to ensure that we can digitize our operations. The other important thing from an IT perspective is security of information. We do sit with important information of industry and the sector, and we need to make sure that it is adequately protected. So we do conduct a number of penetration tests and security assessments. From a communication perspective, as I've indicated, you know, we've had a lot of radio and a lot of TV interviews. This is a picture of my colleague who was on ENCA, Ms. Daphne Fafudi, whose area focuses on regulatory compliance. This team was extremely, anything that was reported to us that was non-compliant, her and the team would go out and investigate that. And we also have a whistleblowing facility wherein a number of these were reported. But we ensure that we engage with the public through various mechanisms. We also took part in various radio stations to ensure that we cover a widespread of our indigenous languages. And we even have focal points in the organization of individuals who can speak specific indigenous languages to then engage through those platforms. Wherein we have videos for infographics, et cetera, we've also translated those into a number of the official languages. We've also contributed to scientific information and data, wherein we were co-authors on a number of publications. And as a regulator, this is quite important because also we have our staff members, some of them who are studying towards their master's, towards their PhD, and this becomes important. But also it's important for us as we operate in the global sphere that we do contribute to knowledge in this area. We've also participated in a number of conferences. A lot of them have been virtual, but where we can engage and attend these conferences in person, we then do so. I've spoken to some initiatives around our staff, and one of them is around training. We are cognizant that we have to ensure that we continuously invest in the training of our staff. We've been fortunate in being able to raise funding for us to host training. And again, because a lot of these were held virtually, we were able to do a lot more than what we typically do. But we were also, where feasible, we're able to have these training sessions held in person. In this picture, these are some of our clinical assessors that had gone through a training for clinical assessors. It was for the South African regulator, participating together with the Nigerian and the Ghanaian regulator. As I've also alluded to this, it's, you know, for us, we are understaffed. So there's a big focus on ensuring that we fill vacant positions within budget. You know, we've engaged also with the National Treasury on this to see if they can increase our allocation so that we can bring in more, we can fill a number of these positions, because we've done an assessment that indicates that for the size of our staff complement, when you compare that to the number of applications that we have, we're just undercapacitated. And you can imagine that that is not the ideal situation to be in, because you know, you will then not be efficient. The wellness of our employees is also important. And so we launched the iCares platform for employee assistance. I'll now go into the KPIs, and I'll talk to the ones that we could not meet for the various areas, and this is for leadership and support. If you remember the prior year, which was 2021, we had a qualified audit opinion, and as we've reported for the 2021-22 financial year, we have now received an unqualified audit opinion. We were able to meet all our other targets as indicated here. From a human resource perspective, we've implemented a number of change management interventions, which we were able to deliver on all of them. Our workplace skills plan to implement training, and for those positions that we budgeted for, we were able to fill 96% of those. And again, the constraint here is really the budget. So we work within what we are able to budget for, and it would be good to increase this number. I've alluded to digitization, that we've really struggled with raising funding for this area, and we've gone out with the executive team to see where else we can secure funding, as we were not successful with the National Treasury. I'll go into some of our core business areas now. So that was support and leadership. In terms of the backlog, I've indicated that this is a backlog that we inherited when SAPRA was established, and we are expecting that this backlog will be completed at the latest in November. And great effort by the team. Again, we had a lot of support from other regulators. We had support also financially from funders, and there was also a contribution from National Treasury for this project. I've also, I've already mentioned the maturity levels. I'm going to skip that one. And in terms of health product authorization, at the time that you know we were reporting for this, which is the 2021-2022 financial year, we had our target. But we can see that we've really put in a lot of work and effort to ensure that we clear this backlog. And that's why already in quarter two of this year, we're able to then report that this backlog will be cleared. So we had a very dedicated focus to clearing the project, and we re-engineered review pathways, and that's what could enable us to clear this backlog. The other area that we track is around the registration of new chemical entities. So these are what we call originator drugs. So this is the first typically in market. There would not be any generics that are available for that. We've been able to finalize on those within the time frame of 590 days. Generics is then where you have an alternative to the new chemical entities. While we're still struggling with this area, we were able to meet our target there. But we need to also ensure that we continuously implement re-engineered review pathways. Quality management systems, we've exceeded that target, and we're quite happy. I mean, even the WHO said this is now becoming one of our strengths. It's a small team, but that was really hard. They were brought on board in 2020, 2021, and have really entrenched a very strong ethos in the organization around quality management. We're still undercapacitated for the size of the regulator that we are. So going forward, this is an area that we need to strengthen, particularly as we work towards reaching maturity level 4, towards having ISO accreditation, et cetera. In the previous financial year, which was 2021-22, we had not met this benchmark, but again, because we had concerted efforts, you know, the team worked really hard, we then in Q2 of this year are able to report that we have met the maturity level 3. From a inspectorate perspective, I mentioned that because of lockdown, we were not able to conduct all our routine inspections. And so we conducted a number of virtual inspections. At times, we also conducted joint inspections. And what helped really with virtual platforms is that you could conduct inspections with some of the top regulators in the world, such as Health Canada, the European Medicines Agency, and they invited SAHPRA to these inspections. And it speaks to the stature and the capability and the quality, excellent quality that we have of inspectors. A lot of our inspectors are also invited by the WHO periodically to join them on inspections that they conduct in other countries. So I think this is an area where it certainly is our strength, but we have to increase the numbers in this area. The area of law enforcement, whenever there is non-compliance to the Medicines Act, I've alluded to it. We work closely with the South African Police Services, wherein we have, you know, through them made arrests and prosecutions for individuals who have contravened the Act. And a lot of the contraventions we saw, they were around illegal importation of products. So what we've also done is we've put SAHPRA staff at the ports of entry. So far, we've put them at the four or five big ports of entry. We need more people in that area. But also, we saw some illegal manufacturing that we were able to deal with, and we continuously address this. These are some of the pictures of products that we either would have confiscated or destroyed because these were non-compliant. You will see that there are what purports to be COVID-19 tests, and these would not have gone through SAHPRA. And so we were able to intercept those before they could, you know, get into the country. You see also we have some masks that were being destroyed. So there's a lot of such activities that we were able to intercept. The other area within regulatory compliance is the area of cannabis. And again, just to stress that this is when CBD, THC is utilized for medicinal purposes. All the other applications do not fall in the scope of SAHPRA. So in the past, when before the schedules were amended, hemp would come to SAHPRA, but it no longer does. And that has all been transferred to the Department of Agriculture. So what you see here is what is for medicinal use. We do issue licenses for those who are manufacturing cannabis for medicinal purposes, and a number of them are exporting into the respective countries that I have indicated here. We currently are sitting with about 307 applications. We've been able to issue 56 licenses, and 67 will be issued quite soon because we have finalized the resolutions on those. And also just to show you that we have quite a good spread across the country in terms of provinces that are applying. I've mentioned the challenge around conducting inspections during lockdown. We saw the impact thereof on issuance of new GMP and good wholesaling licenses, and therefore we missed our target, but we do anticipate that in future we should be able to meet this target. We also have limited resources, as I've indicated, in this area. We've been able to meet the other targets. From a clinical and pharmaceutical evaluation, I've alluded to that we implemented the Med Safety app, which is not only used by SAHPRA, but it's used by other regulators across the world, the MHRA in the UK, the FDA, Ghana FDA, Nigeria, NAFDAC in Ethiopia, and a number of other African countries. So this is a platform that is well accepted in the regulatory sphere and very, very easy to utilize and report any adverse events following immunization. The intention is that we will then roll this out to other other therapeutic areas. In this area, we did struggle quite a bit. If I look at the area of Section 21, we did have some technical challenges there that led to us not meeting that challenge. We were also under-resourced. We have subsequently appointed more staff members into this area and have also addressed the challenges with the digital platforms. The clinical trials have indicated that this has gone well, and this was enabled really through redirecting of our team and working very lengthy hours by our staff members. On reports for health product signals, again, we were inundated with reports. This is another area of pharmacovigilance that we want to strengthen. If I could make an example, the MHRA in the UK, the size of the team they have in this area of pharmacovigilance is about 60 individuals. At SAHPRA, we only have 5 individuals in this area. And we know that the reports that we receive are in terms of numbers, are quite comparable. So we are severely understaffed in this area. And we'll be working hard to increase capacity. We continue to have a number of webinars to educate the public really on reporting any adverse events following immunization or any safety matter regarding to a health product.
Hey.
Norman, I think
you asked that person to mute.
Thank you.
Please.
Thank you.
In the area of medical devices and radiation control, again, this is an area that, you know, particularly at the beginning of the pandemic, we were quite busy. We had to put in place mechanisms to ensure that we've got good performing diagnostic tests for COVID. And, you know, we put in place mechanisms that ensure that we can do our own assessment of the quality of the diagnostic tests in the country. We work very closely with other stakeholders such as the NHLS in this regard. We also are participating very actively in our co-chairing the African Medical Devices Forum. And again, this is quite a great platform for SAHPRA to be able to lead. We are also part of the WHO Global Model Regulatory Framework Working Group for Medical Devices. So this is a global team that develops regulations as well as guidelines that for the WHO that are then used by various member states. In the area of radiation control, we have been engaging with the Department of Minerals and Energy, as well as the National Nuclear Regulator on a co-regulatory framework. In this area of medical devices and radiation control, we were able to meet some of our targets and some we missed, particularly the one pertaining to guidelines. And this is because we still needed to have the regulations finalized and then published for implementation. And that process took longer than what we had anticipated. And we continue to work on that, and we anticipate that they would then be published quite soon. The other KPI that we missed was around the co-regulatory framework with the NNR, and that had changes in leadership at the NNR that has led to delays in some of the work that we had started with them, but we do hope that we'll see some improvement with time. And then just to reflect on our HR, as indicated, we'll now go to HR and finance. Overall, I think from a transformation perspective, SAHPRA is quite a well-transformed organization. We do have the majority of our employees at 61% being females, and these females being largely in the professional qualified areas. And, you know, what you see in terms of these demographics is typically what we would see in the health sector, particularly with the types of skills that we've been largely recruiting around pharmacy, et cetera, for medicines. This is the profile. What we have also put in place is our employment equity plan for the 2022-23 financial year. And we will be targeting the area of ensuring that we do recruit individuals with disabilities wherein the work does accommodate that, so that we are compliant with our equity plan. I'm now going to hand over to the CFO to take us through the finance slides.
Thank you, CEO, and good afternoon. The table shows just the progress made from 2018-19, the first time SAPRA was audited, to 21-22, from three qualification areas to the unqualified audits we achieved in 21-22. A significant reduction of revenue findings specifically, which was one of the challenges we experienced historically, was seen, and the majority of our regular expenditure was also detected internally by SAPRA and disclosed. We've also made good progress in reducing the overall balance for irregular expenditure year on year through condonations obtained from the National Treasury. So the next 2 years, our target is to obtain a clean audit, focusing on the material non-compliance areas in terms of procurement, AFS adjustments, and revenue management. On the next slide. Just waiting for the next slide to show. Thank you. So on the audit report, the main action items or corrective measures we need to implement going forward is on the financial statement adjustments. Basically, we had two material adjustments during this audit, one relating to the commitment note prior year figure, and also services in kind, where it was advised to split the classification between backlog and services in kind expenditure in our notes, which was made. Going forward, the corrective measures is just to perform data validation checks as provided and to calculate the correct totals before disclosure in the financial statements together with detailed reviews. The services in kind are agreements with third parties just to obtain the supporting evidence that would be needed by the Auditor General to audit and to ensure accuracy of that information. And also then to perform detailed reviews against the supporting evidence from third parties. On expenditure management, we need to do workshops just on the contract managers to ensure that that is ingrained in the culture, looking out for expenditure management and further implementing consequence management processes that was established in the previous year. On the revenue management side, we've implemented already confirmation step of payment and review of those documents before commencement of work and supporting documents following through to finance before capturing on the system. The other main challenge or step is just on our retention fees in terms of our databases with requiring updated client information and license and product information to make sure we can follow up on historical debt. During the 22-23 financial year, we did extensive work on follow-ups of historical payments that was due, and it's just to update the relevant databases with payments received going forward. On the next slide. Just the analysis or the irregular expenditure balance, you'll see from 10.3 million to 3 million in 21-22. Our historical irregular expenditure has been addressed in full as we received condonation process following consequence management implemented. The current year irregular expenditure mainly contributed to three transgressions, and the main one was due to a legal matter that required extensions and variations that was done. In terms of addressing the current year irregular expenditure as well, we've appointed a panel of experts a legal panel of experts that can help and assist in terms of managing unprecedented or unexpected court applications. We were inundated with some of those during the financial year as well. For the remaining three, the consequence management processes has commenced and our intention is to clear that balance as well by financial year end. On the next slide. Just on the financial analysis, for the first time, we have generated more fee income than government funding or the government transfer received. So that's a good trajectory we are on. That would help us to fund some of our vacancies, but not all of it. An increase in our fee income is from 107 million to 181 million in the year 21-2022. We also did see an increase in our investments or interest revenue. It's mainly due to revenue received in advance, our cash balance, receiving the money up front, and we've invested that in the Corporation of Public Deposits as mandated by the National Treasury. On the next slide. Just an analysis of our fees per function, the main categories being medicine, evaluations and registrations, inspection permits and licenses, and unregistered medicines. And we've seen a increase across the financial years on all categories except for unregistered medicines, mainly due to the nature and type of applications received for unregistered medicines. And in terms of the new medicine evaluations, seeing the throughput increasing a bit, and with the previously gazetted fees having an impact on our fee generation. Next slide, please. Just analysis of our revenue and expenditure over the past few years. We've seen the dip we had in 2021, which was a real concern for us. 21-22 showing the trajectory increasing with a accounting surplus of 28.2 million, and it was mainly due to our own revenue generation spiking in the last quarter of the financial year, and also general under expenditure on some of our line items. In terms of our accumulated surpluses, we're sitting at 53.6 million, so financial sustainability looks good as at end of 21-2022. The main challenge is relating to our vacancies. We've got about 95 positions, unfunded vacant positions, and the annual cost thereof would be 67 million, which is the financial challenges in terms of what the CEO referred to. In our balance sheet, our liabilities mainly relate to revenue received in advance. So not a liability we expect to pay back, but to turn into revenue as the services are being completed. Next slide, please. In terms of our external funding, we had additional funding coming in from new parties, but mainly the external funding we received related to the backlog project. We engaged ODA NEPAD as well to assist us strengthening safety monitoring systems for vaccines, and also CHAI for our healthcare professional COVID vaccine data analytics. So that was basically the main fundings received, and also from BMGF direct funding received for the backlog project. Next slide. Thank you, CEO. Over to you.
Thank you. Thanks, Richard. So, Chair, just to conclude, just to say that, you know, while we've done well and have achieved in these areas, it doesn't mean that the you know, there's no room for improvement, or that there aren't any other areas that remain to be challenging. I think we've demonstrated that fairly, that there are areas indeed that we still have quite a lot of work to do. And a critical really issue is around capacitation of the organization and digitization of the organization. I think those are two important levers that will enable us to be effective and efficient as a regulator. We have seen an increase in the number of applications that are coming through. And so, you know, we certainly are constrained, and any support we can get from the committee in terms of engaging with National Treasury to support our efforts of getting more funding, that would be greatly appreciated. We also are paying attention to legal challenges, and we have actually commenced with a process to review the Medicines Act to ensure that there are no ambiguities, to ensure that it aligns with the current context, and that you know, it's quite relevant. So that process has started. Engaging with the public, we can never do this enough. We continuously have quite a number of webinars. I think one of the latest ones that we did together with the Minister of Health, with other colleagues in the vaccine area, was on the GBS case, the Guillain-Barré syndrome. And, you know, we were commended in terms of how we were able to speedily report on that. We, the provincial Department of Health engaged with the family. We were transparent and reported on that case. We did that in a platform wherein we can be asked questions by the media, questions by the public. And even with the second case of GBS, we reported on that quite timelessly. So really, that's how we want to operate. And the core message is that, you know, while we say that these vaccines are safe, effective, and are quality products, like many other health products, you do have to monitor any adverse events, and you have to do investigations on the causal link to a vaccine. And I think we've got a fantastic committee in terms of NICEC that's chaired by Prof. Hanalei Meyer, that does these causality assessments and works with SAHPRA. And just to conclude and say that, you know, we remain, I think, to be quite a young organization. We've achieved a lot, but there's still a lot more that we must do. You know, the area of medical devices, we've alluded to that, complementary medicines, cannabis. Really, there's still a lot of work for SAHPRA to do as our scope has increased with the establishment of SAHPRA. And one other important area that we will be focusing on, as we're seeing, you know, pandemics wherein the disease-causing agent either crosses species, et cetera, the area of One Health is what we will be focusing on also going forward. Chair, I'm going to pause here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Semeke and Chin and Professor Alan Reed. There are quite a number of members who want to engage with you. Congratulations on your unqualified audit. And it is quite late in the day, honorable members, but let us see how this will go. The following members want to ask some discussions. It's Wilson, Sardin, Clark, Tembukwayo, Isma, Churua, Munyai, Dela. Wilson, Sardin, Clark, Tembukwayo, Isma, Churua,
thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I hope I'm audible. And thank you to SAHPRA. I think, first of all, there are some congratulations in order. First of all, on your audit results, that is always a highlight. It certainly makes us feel better as a portfolio committee that you've got the bulk of your situation under control. And then, of course, your WHO recognition in terms of your maturity levels. And I think that is a job very, very well done. It gives us faith in SAHPRA. So congratulations to Dr. Semeke, your team, to Helen Rees and the board. I think those are amazing achievements, and I think we must always give recognition where recognition is due. There are a couple of concerns in your report, obviously, and I think some of these you've covered. I was raising questions as you began, and obviously throughout the presentation you have addressed some of these. Obviously, the irregular expenditure of $3 million is always very, very concerning. It's not a small sum of money, and you have stated in your report towards the end, and thank you, that there is consequent management and corrective measures being put in place. We hope that obviously that will be deal with primarily very quickly. But there is a discussion, or is an indication, that one of these is a result of a legal dispute. So if you could give us some information on that, I'd be delighted. Concerns around your program four, and that's your clinical and pharmaceutical evaluation. Now, you know, this is a pretty critical area in terms of the whole big picture of what SAPRA obviously does. I kind of got the impression from your presentation that these were as a result of possibly digital or IT failures. And that, along with your high turnover in your technical skills development, and particularly retention of highly skilled staff. I know that we produce first-class scientists in this country, of that I have no doubt, and I'm sure that a lot of these are part of SAPRA as well. I mean, yet we do not seem to be able to retain them, and that's always an issue. Is there any plans in place to make sure that we retain the highly skilled personnel that we've got? And obviously, you are indicating that there is no budget in terms of your vacancy rate, which is concerning. And if there has been any progress on that. Very interested to hear what cases you still have before the courts. You know, a couple of times legal issues were raised. If you could just give us a highlight backgrounds on those particular cases. And then two cases that are completely off the mark. In the Biz News today, and I found this most alarming, is that a senior member of Pfizer, Janine Small, made an admission that the Pfizer COVID-19, their Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine, was not tested to see if it actually prevented transmissions or if it was effective against COVID-19. Now, that's quite an alarming article to read. And I would like to know where SAPRA stands on this. Our understanding is that you authorized vaccines. What kind of testing was done? If Pfizer never tested it, on whose opinion were we working, and how did we establish that Pfizer actually was effective in preventing COVID or reducing the symptoms on COVID? I find that a most alarming article to read today. And, you know, it's the kind of article that has a huge impact in a place like South Africa, where number one, we are seeing more and more vaccine hesitancy, and we were obviously quite severely assaulted by people who were anti-vaxxers, not just you but ourselves as well, who did not agree with this, and that it was all a plot by Big Pharma, and obviously that kind of article, you know, is kind of hair-raising. And just lastly, I want to discuss particularly codeine regulations. We are seeing a big uptake in youths using codeine, whether it be in cough mixtures, whether it be in tablet form. Obviously, codeine is used in a lot of on the shelf, off the shelf. Remedies, cough mixtures, etc. They are now mixing this with strawberry drinks and what have you, and it has become, and they have several names for it, one of them being Leap. And we're seeing a big increase, particularly in very young people, of misuse of codeine. And it's because it's so easily accessible, number one, and number two, these products are principally cheap. Can you please give us some idea? And I know that pharmacists are supposed to record codeine, how it's being sold, in what format, and provide information to people who are purchasing it and advice on it. And yet we know that this doesn't happen. I mean, I can walk into any pharmacy tomorrow and buy a codeine-based product without a question being raised. Can you tell us, please, what you are doing to improve the regulation on codeine sales? Because we now are sitting with an alarming situation because of its cheapness and its easy availability, and it is affecting our use in principle. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I had 100 questions, but I've bring it down to only 4, so don't stress about this. Now, I'm also concerned about the irregular expenditure of 3 million rand. I think it's a bit alarming, and I would also like an explanation around that, please. And then you stated it was on my slides 34 and report I received. I don't know what slide it is now on your side, but out of 3,300 backlog applications for medicine registrations received, you said you cleared 2,500. Can you please explain to me why this backlog happened in the first place, and also the same explanation for the medicine variations sector, please? Do you see the establishment of a backlog clearance program as a success? I understand it's working, but do you see it as a success further on in the future if backlogs arise again? And what was the reason for the decrease in the issuing of licenses for manufacturers of alcohol-based hand wraps? And what impact will this have on health facilities and so forth? And my last question is, it was on my slide 51 where you spoke about the 54 rejected products. It was three columns there. And the last column, if you count it together, it came down to a total of 54 rejected projects. I just want to know what the reason for that was, please. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon to the SAHPRA team. And my congratulations also in order in terms of your clean audit. There are a couple of questions I'd like to ask. Member Wilson has addressed the Pfizer vaccine issue, and I'm also very interested to hear your feedback on that, because I've had many queries today from members of the public relating this. And also Member von Staden has covered the irregular 3 million rand. Can you please provide clarity in terms of your backlog reduction strategies in generic medicine registrations? And then how did SAHPRA focus on raising funds in terms of its capacitation? I'd be interested to know how you did that. I'm also seeking clarity on staff members that were moved from the NDOH through the Labor Relations Act and transferred to SAHPRA. And, you know, what was the outcome of that and why was that done? If you could also tell me how many arrests were made and how many successful prosecutions were realized in terms of illegal contraventions related to the Substance Act and the contravention of the Pharmacy Act. Can SAHPRA provide a list to us? And I'm not expecting you to do this today because it's quite a long list, but if you could in future, please send us a report as to who has qualified for licenses in terms of the cultivation, manufacturing, and distribution of cannabis for medical purposes. How many legal challenges are outstanding and what is being spent on legal costs to address these matters? Can we please get an update in terms of shortages of yellow fever injections and morphine powder? And can SAHPRA please confirm if there are any other medicines that are within short supply that we should know? And then in instances where where there are a single supplier of critical medicines, has SAHPRA investigated or considered the use of multiple suppliers? And regarding these shortages, has the policy on priority review pathways provided effective effectiveness in addressing this? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation done to us. And before I ask questions, I would like to say to Dr. Semete and Prof. Rees to say, yesterday afternoon, we all received an email that was from you that had inquiries on matters of secretarial nature, which had no business for it to be drawn to our attention as the committee members. And to say to you that we have the utmost confidence in our secretary, Mrs. Majalamba, who's doing a good job. So we usually don't communicate with you as an entity. And this has never happened. And I think it must not happen. It must stop here. You communicate with her about the times and everything and don't include us. as members of this committee, and she deserves an apology, please. My first question is in connection with the AG on the record keeping in connection with the entity that did not implement proper record keeping to ensure complete, relevant and accurate information to support financial statements. And I would like to ask whether this has got no implication on the employee turnover, which implies the total number of workers who leave your company or your entity, and also directly related to the statement that you are severely understaffed. And citing for an example that was presented in this presentation of an example of the resignation of the only software developer. And I would like to ask to say which factors are leading to this, to the workers to leave your company. How open are you to do introspections pertaining to specifically the attitude towards your workers? Have you done at least a survey, a simple survey of a level of the satisfaction of workers in the work atmosphere? And say, for an example, you would have done a satisfactory survey, and one of the findings would be that the reasons why people are leaving this entity is because of the attitude that they get from the executives. What would your reason be, and how are you prepared to do your introspection so that you can be able to retain the workers that are working under you for sustainability and continuity of what is expected of you as an entity? And to continue with another question, to say in under the section of inspectorate and regulatory compliance on issuing of licenses throughout the provinces, it's very much worrying and it's disappointing. Comparatively, of all the provinces, like for an example, Gauteng submitted 86, out of 86, only 14 licenses were issued. Limpopo 24, out of 24, only 4 issued. KwaZulu-Natal had 56 submitted, out of that only 7 issued. Eastern Cape 21, 5 issued. Western Cape 61, 15 issued. Mpumalanga 13, only 1 license issued. Northwest 16, only 5. Northern Cape 7, only 1. Free State 25, only 4. Why is this trend happening? Why is this happening? We can't understand to say why is so less licenses issued by your company. I need a reason there, a very convincing reason towards that. And there was also an issue on irregular expenditure. Not satisfactorily measures that are convincing has been presented by you here. I mean, the simplest reasons that you gave are not acceptable, because irregular expenditure is committed by the top management or the executive. You haven't reported to us about issues of accountability and charging of those that are responsible for this. Please provide us with the substantial matters pertaining to this. The last one, South African Cabinet has finally given the green light to sign the African Medicine Agency Treaty and adoption of the African Union Model Law on medical product regulation. Although the complementary medicines regulations in 2017 under the Medicines and Related Substances Act have been declared unconstitutional by the Gauteng North High Court on the 1st of October 2020 and further invalidated and declared unlawful by the Supreme Court of Appeal on the 11th of April 2022.
What is your involvement or knowledge acquisition pertaining to this matter? Are you now and the Minister of Health going to rely on the AMA and model law on medicinal products to usher in harmonized regulations and guidelines adopted by the AMA to regain full control of the domestic market? And lastly, I just would like to say, there's a statement here that is a quote to say, you are the best in the world. You can be, yes, the best in the world, but the worst in South Africa. That's why you will always have a lot of protest against you. Have you ever asked yourself why there are protests against our entity? Thank you, Chairperson, for this opportunity. And just to say to the Chair, if Honorable Chirwa can't be able to present the questions, I will be able to do it due to maybe problems of being of inter, what is it? Yeah, of electricity. Thanks, Chair.
Ismail. Chairperson, Honorable Ismail did send a message on the group to say she's got no connection, she would not ask questions. Thank you.
Thank you. So back to you. If first, Honorable Chirwa, if she is able to, otherwise, Dr. Chirwa.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Let me read Honorable Chirwa's questions. Who are the sponsors and founders of SAPRA, and what is the relation or working relationship with each sponsor? What are the programs SAPRA is working on with persons associated with or involved with their sponsors? And what are other links not overtly stipulated, e.g. Bill Gates funded SAPRA previous years, Bill Gates associated vaccine approved. Why didn't SAPRA pull out Pfizer following the release of the possible adverse effects that Pfizer had hidden from the public? Was SAPRA aware of these leaked documents prior to them being leaked? And what was the response thereof, noting the possible medical implication this was potentially going to be? Is it true that Pfizer has applied for dilution of current Comirnaty vaccine to be used in children? What is the process of scientifically verifying this data? Is it dependent on their submission, or is SAPRA going to conduct their own investigation on this? How many cases have been reported to SAPRA on adverse effects and alleged deaths due to vaccines? How many are being investigated? How many investigations have been concluded? Please appraise the details. In connection with wasteful expenditure, irregular expenditure, on the 2nd October 2017, Medicure Sustainable Healthcare Solutions Pty Ltd was issued a license in terms of Section 22C in brackets 1 in brackets B of the Act read with the regulations by the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority. In terms of Medicure's license, it is permitted to manufacture certain medical devices, including reprocessed single-use devices, and it is permitted to import certain reprocessed SUDs. The company provided the independent validations in 2017 to SAPRA and also received its first contract with Netcare. SAPRA direct emails to Netcare ended this contract in 2018. In 2019, validation results were sent to SAPRA for a second time after they requested via a virtual meeting. The validation process, which is FDA approved and which Medicure submits to, was also submitted to SAPRA in 2020 with no feedback received from SAPRA to date. Please appraise the committee on why this case was handled in this manner and why SAPRA hasn't responded yet since 2020. On behalf of Honorable Chirwa, her questions ends here. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Munyai, followed by Honorable Gela.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation, Professor Rees and the CEO Tumi. Without Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, without exaggeration, I'm so thrilled that SAPRA achieved maturity level 3. And congratulations on your unqualified audit achievement. Your accomplishment is way above and beyond our expectation and satisfactions. I'm incredibly proud of SAPRA and the achievement. We have no doubt that they work very hard. We understand the history, where they come from. We understand, we know the backlog SAPRA inherited. And before I go to other details, Honorable Chair, because as members of Parliament, we are very astute on the matters of international relations. South Africa is interconnectedness, interdependent with any other countries across the globe. The drugs SAPRA approve are not only coming from South Africa alone. Majority of them are coming from the international market. So therefore, SAPRA have to collaborate. We appreciate that they collaborate with individual business people, multinational companies, and so on, to be able to approve the drugs to protect our populations. And at the very same time, generate revenue to sustain this regulatory authority. And we also appreciate that the decision is scientific evidence-based decision. It's not a political influence decision. So therefore, the mistake SAPRA would have made, we understand where you have started and you have presented that particular progress. So we must encourage you so that you continue to work very hard towards achieving a clean audit. A member of parliament, you can't come here all the time like you are coming to slaughterhouse. We must encourage you so that you achieve accountability or oversight we do over this organization. It's not macro management of the organization, and it's not that we should be hard on them. It's about encouraging the organization. We must work together so that they succeed. All the entities that came before us, SAPRA is the only organization that went to Treasury to condone. Some of the organization entities here, they never went to Treasury, which is a fundamental mistake. So SAPRA has done everything not to hide the weaknesses they've experienced in the line of their operation. I'm so proud of this organization, Honorable Chair. I must say, for me today, I have no question for you because the report is so solid, it's exciting, and we must congratulate you. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the report from SAPRA and also their achievement for getting ML3 for vaccines and also regulatory oversight, including ML4. We are so proud of you, Of course, I was having a lot of questions that I wanted to raise, but during the presentation, some of the questions were answered, especially on the financial statement, and also on the concern that the AG has raised, and also on the irregular expenditure. I think the CFO have touched what happened to have irregular expenditure, and also the consequence management, and also that at least you were so transparent. I think you were good in your presentation and telling us everything that is happening in your department, especially as in your conclusion, you highlighted that this is still a new baby, a young baby, the institution. There will be some mistakes, but the way you are implementing your program so far, and in some of the questions, I think Honorable Mnyai have said it mouthfully. Chair, I don't want to waste time because really other colleagues have raised questions, and some of them, the presenter and also the CFO have touched, but the further than less to say that if we can just speed up the issue of staffing, because on your program four, it's where you are lacking and it's your core function. And I believe and trust that you are going to correct that so that at least come and next financial year, we'll get better results in terms of what the Auditor General have raised as the matters in your report. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members, for the
Chair, I think as members, through you, Chair, my apology, but I think it's important for us to support SAPRA as portfolio committee so that at least we give them support where it's necessary and also work with them. Thank you very much, Chair.
No. Thank you very much. Also, I've already congratulated SAPRA on achieving an unqualified audit and also the other two awards, which has been raised now a number of times, and then also for Professor Rees with the order that she received from the French government. It's well deserved, and congratulations to you too in your personal capacity. Then I want to just speak about your surplus and your increased revenue generation capabilities that you've been able to develop. And we will remember that it was a challenge before. We do note the number of applications had increased tremendously. So I would think that allows you to have this increased revenue generation. But if at the same time, if it may be just tell us what you're planning to do with any surplus that you might have, and how you'll be able to apply some of these to fill some of the vacant posts which you currently experience. We've heard many of the members refer to the challenges with starting or filling of posts, etc. But be that as it may, I'm going to quote what Honorable Mnyai said, and he said we need to encourage the organization. And really, we should encourage you. You've done very well from understanding where this has come from, how young this organization is, the responsibility that was there. It's a major responsibility to have to decide what is good for the people and what is bad for the people, what is good for individuals and bad for individual people. And it is surely not an easy task. It is, and you're correct, to base it purely on the scientific evidence and the best scientific evidence. And I know you also hold the gold standard of random clinical trials as the best measurement by which you decide. And so from that perspective, I want to commend you for holding steadfast to the principles of scientific evidence in your decisions, which you have to make We also understand that there are many people who have interest in devices or medicine or pharmaceuticals, drugs, etc. In terms of the financial outlook that they have, that they need to make money from these kind of products. And imagine that there was no control over these products in any market for that matter. I note the medicine which was sold in one of the townships in Cape Town. I was quite disappointed to actually see that there are individuals who sell scheduled medicine at the hawker stations or on the street corners. And if it wasn't for an organization like yourself, we would surely have been in terrible problems in South Africa. And when one watches a program, for example, in the USA, and you look at the opioid challenge which some of these countries are having, especially Canada and the USA, then it encourages one even more that we have people like yourselves who are always there, available, looking out for these kind of challenges, have the courage to go and investigate and have the courage to bring those to the attention of the SAPS and other law enforcement agencies. So you need to continue doing that. You need to continue to improve towards a clean audit, which you're hoping to achieve. We hope that you will be able to achieve that by next year. And I also note your request for engagement, the portfolio committee to assist in the engagements with National Treasury, for you to receive more funding, and also your discussions around the review of the Medicines Act. So we are in full support of what you are doing. We are really encouraging you, and you have many questions to answer raised by the honorable members. I'm going to allow you that space. It is now 18:31, and we're hoping to be completed by not later than 1900 hours. Back to you, Professor Rees and Dr. Semete.
Thank you. I'm going to invite quite a lot of the questions were pertaining to the operational aspects. I'm going to ask Dr. Semete first to come in, and she can guide the questions also to her colleagues, and then I'll come in after her. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks, colleagues, for these questions. We've clustered them around finance. There were questions around our core business, questions around HR, legal, medicine supply, and I guess the overall SAPRA operations. So we'll start with finance, and I'll have Rahant handle those questions.
Thank you, CEO. Just to provide a little bit more detail on some of the irregular transgressions, so specifically on the legal disputes that we had in the span of 1 to 2 weeks, 4 urgent court order applications that had to be addressed. And basically, that's, if I can recall correctly, related to compounding of medicines from various court applicants. So SAPRA had to respond in quite a fastidious manner and in a specific time frame. Also, in terms of the legal costs, you would see in the financial statements, and it's also reflecting there the legal proceedings against SAPRA in the 2021-22 financial year, where the expenditure increased from 2 million to 7.5 million. In terms of our condonation process or our consequence management process, you will see the reduction in the overall balance, and also to remember that National Treasury will not condone irregular expenditure if consequence management has not been implemented. So we have established quite a robust loss control function. We do determination reports to identify liable officials, and then to issue or implement the consequence management, of which the proof will then be submitted to National Treasury before they will consider condonation of that process. So we've done a lot of work on irregular expenditure. We've updated SOPs. We've established or filled vacancies in the SCM team. We have also training and workshops initially early in the financial year. And this all will build a culture of improved governance and controls over our SCM process. And historically, we had over, I think, 30 transgressions that we were able to bring down to 3. And it is management's intention to submit the condonation requests within the next month to National Treasury to get those processes condoned. In terms of budget on vacancies, you will also see in the annual report the growth in our cost of employment year on year from 147 million to 182 million. And for this year, we've budgeted 207 million. So all the additional revenue that we generate mainly focuses on filling of those vacancies. And I think we've got about 40 vacancies planned to fill throughout this financial year. The cost of which is quite expensive. And to the question on how our surpluses will be utilized, we did receive approval of our surplus from National Treasury, but they did caution us not to use it for filling our vacancies. And the reason for that is the surplus is a short-term turnaround, a short-term profit, basically. We should be shying away from utilizing surpluses to fund permanent vacancies that has a longer duration. So all effort, it is on top of mind for management and the board, allocating funds what we can to fund our vacancies going over the MTF period, and hence also just requesting additional assistance as the filling of the 95 vacant posts is quite a big amount. It's a long-term commitment. That's over 67 million rand. On the application of the surplus on other projects, so what we'll be focusing on is some of our capital projects, digitization of systems to get us away from manual processes that are resulting in potential audit adjustments and so forth. Potential short-term contracts maybe to just fill a gap for a specific duration. And that is currently the envision strategy on utilizing our surplus. There was a question on record keeping from the AG. How did that affect staff turnover, or maybe in terms of the staff issue? And just to indicate that specific record keeping related to the audit adjustments that we made on our commitment notes and our classification of services in kind and some other minor adjustments as well. So not specifically raised in that context. Thank you, CEO. I think that was the questions on finance.
Thank you very much, Rehad. I don't know if Prof. maybe wants to come in on the, before I tackle with Portia, some of the questions around our core business. If you want to comment, Prof. on the vaccines maybe, or the backlog, and then I'll come in.
Thank you, certainly. I'll put on a hat because I work closely with WHO on vaccines generally and chair the African Committee for the WHO. So on the Pfizer vaccine, the issue was, and the concern was in the article, thank you for bringing that to our attention, was that there was not data on whether or not the vaccine prevented transmission. Now, in fact, it was very well known that there wasn't data for any of the vaccines, frankly, on whether they prevented transmission. When the clinical trials were done for all of the vaccines, all the COVID vaccines at the outset, the priority was, does this vaccine work in terms of preventing severe disease and death, and is it safe? And that's what we got more rapidly out of the trials. The transmission work is being done now and will be done in the future, because clearly first prize when you have a vaccine for any infectious disease, you want to prevent severe disease and you want to prevent transmission. That means you want to stop people transmitting from one person to another. So for none of the vaccines did we have data on transmission. So for all the vaccines, what we looked at, safety, quality, and efficacy, and particularly efficacy at preventing severe disease, hospitalization, and death. What we can say for the vaccines that are now registered in South Africa is that all of them have demonstrated an ability to prevent severe disease, hospitalization, and death, and all of them are being monitored for safety, and all of them are regarded as safe. The second question was the serious adverse event for Pfizer. Now, for many vaccines, when you start to roll them out, instead of having clinical trials on tens or 20,000, 30,000 people, you're suddenly rolling them out into populations of millions. And that's where you'll see if there are going to be rare, what we call adverse events, side effects. If they are very, very rare, You will only see them when you introduce the vaccines into a much, much larger population. So for Pfizer, the very rare side effect that was seen was what's called myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart muscle. On the other side of it, COVID also causes myocarditis at a much higher rate. So the benefit of the vaccine far, far, far exceeds, even for myocarditis, the risk of COVID. We've also had, and this was what was just reported, we've had two side effects, serious adverse events with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. One was what was called TTS, which is a clotting disorder. And the other one was the one that has just been referred to, which is the Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is a disorder of the nervous system, broadly speaking. And in both cases, these are extremely, extremely, extremely rare side effects of the vaccines. And what you do when you get anything like this, you then look again and say, does the benefit exceed the risk? And in all cases, the benefits of these vaccines, even with these extraordinarily rare events, the benefit of the vaccine exceeds the risk, because in fact, for many of these things you see, such as a clotting problem, you get many, many more clotting problems if you get COVID. So as I say, what we do know is that these vaccines are protective against severe disease, hospitalization, and death. And I think that's extremely important. I'm not, I'll perhaps stop there and be very happy to take further questions. In terms of the backlog, where did the 16,000 come from? So I'll start on that, and then Tumi can also come into this later on with colleagues with the CRO as well. So when the Medicines Control Council was transformed into SAHPRA under different legislation, there were several aims, but one of them was to make SAHPRA a much more autonomous organization in terms of being able to do a lot of the work in-house instead of outsourcing it to other academic experts. The old way of doing, of reviewing registration dossiers from the Medicines Control Council was kind of designed for building a backlog. First of all, it was completely paper-based. So any one of these applications, you could have 16, 20 huge, big boxes of paper that had to be gone through by different experts. Secondly, there was a referral. A lot of the review was done by external academic experts, but there weren't sort of standard operating procedures or agreements with those people about timelines. So somebody could be very good and very fast and very efficient, and somebody else could sit with those evaluations and not produce anything for a really long period of time, because they were not, their contract didn't say this is the timeline in which you're going to deliver. Now, the combination of these and the approach to evaluation, which was an approach that was appropriate for a Medicines Control Council 20 years prior, but wasn't appropriate and wasn't fit for purpose for new generations of drugs and much more data, to review. That approach, all of those three things together, meant that we were never, from the MCC point of view, it was never going to be able to keep up. And so, that, you know, you're never going to be able to keep up. And that's where the 16,000 came from. But SAHPRA recognized that. It was one of the key priorities. If you have a backlog like this, if you're inefficient as the regulator, then what you do is you stop products getting out into the public domain for community benefit. You stop the benefits to public health. That's problem number one. And number two, if you have, say, local manufacturers who want to register their product, then you're also preventing the development of local industry. So it was seen as critical for SAHPRA in its first year to get rid of this backlog. But in order to do it, we couldn't have done it using the business as usual model from the MCC. So we had to go through an entire process of evaluating the way that we were reviewing dossiers, streamlining it, looking at what is state of the art nowadays in terms of regulatory methods to review. And all of that was done. And I'll hand over to the CEO, because not only did we do it for the backlog, but what we're now doing is we're saying that is now moving towards state of the art. We do not want another backlog to build up. And so all of these approaches that have been adopted are now being introduced into all of the new applications and their review as well. I hope that explains that. I'm happy to come back in on any other matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Prof. Rees, on that point. If I could just pick up then on the Pfizer, as there were more questions around this, with reports around the adverse events following immunization, and that was the report from the US. We have issued, and this was a few months back, we even issued a statement as SAHPRA in response to that, but also indicated that Pfizer does report to SAHPRA what we call our periodic safety reports. So they have the they're accountable to ensuring that reporting on any adverse events following immunization is done to the regulator. So we acknowledge, we noted that report from the US, but we stated then the context, the local context in South Africa. In terms of the RTU formulation for pediatric populations, we have indeed received the submission for this. As a regulator, we don't conduct the test ourselves. We then review data that is made available to us, and this applies across the board. We're not a research institution. And so we would then review the data that Pfizer would have then made available to us. I want to also maybe just comment on while we're talking on adverse events following immunization, there was a question around the numbers. Again, this is available on our website. We have a microsite. We update it quite regularly. And so we are transparent around the number of reports that we receive. Out of the 37 million vaccines that have been administered in the country, we have received 6,900 adverse events following immunization. And we provide details on these in terms of some of these are just a sore arm, fever, et cetera, and the majority of them resolve within a few days. And this represents a reporting level of 0.02 for both the Janssen and the Pfizer vaccine, and very comparable to what we're seeing across the world. So these are the ones that resolve within a few days. We have had cases of death being reported. Again, this is available on our website. We indicate the number that we have evaluated. And to date, we have evaluated 192 of these 217 deaths, and we have found those to be coincidental. We go into a lot of detail on this also on our website. So I do believe that that information is available. There are currently 25 that are being investigated. We have reported on the two deaths related to GBS that were causally linked to the vaccine. So we can say with confidence that we have only reported on two deaths related to the vaccine. The rest are either coincidental or the individuals had other comorbidities. And we are then evaluating the rest. I'm also going to then reflect on the African Medicines Agency, and indeed we're quite thrilled with the developments in this area. And for us, as SAHPRA, we participate on the continent, on all of these numerous platforms, it really gives impetus to what we do, this progress around AMA. And indeed, you made reference to the model law. So while AMA would be an African platform that supports harmonization, and in the short term will focus on advanced therapies, every member state still has autonomy. So we would still have our Medicines Act that guides how we do what we do. We would still have our own regulations, but there would be instances wherein we say, all of us as regulators, once a decision has been made through AMA, how will that then be implemented at a country level? But every country still has its own autonomy. There was then a question around the complementary medicine and the legal case around that. Indeed, we have accepted that, and we again issued a statement to this effect. We are reviewing the regulations, and really at the core of this, it was what was being challenged was the definition of a complementary medicine. The outcome was that our definition of a complementary medicine is too broad. It may even include products that are not necessarily medicines as per the definition in the Medicines Act. There was a clear acknowledgement in this court decision that complementary medicines have to be regulated. However, SAHPRA needs to ensure that the definition is indeed within the scope of what a medicine is. We've been given 12 months to amend the regulations, and that's a process that is currently ongoing. I'm going to then reflect on two other matters and hand over to Portia. I'll reflect on cannabis in terms of why the low numbers. Again, this is an area that we have seen a surge in applications. We are undercapacitated. We will not be able to increase the number of licenses that we issue. And also just to indicate that prior to issuing a license, we have to go and inspect a facility. So that means that, you know, and at a time we send two inspectors, and as I say, we're undercapacitated. They go and they assess the facility. They look at the submitted information and then make a recommendation. At times, even a recommendation that we make requires a bit of back and forth. So the numbers that we've seen is after, you know, we've really put a lot of effort into ensuring that we support this area, but we genuinely are undercapacitated to deal with the number of applications that that have come through. The last one that I'd like to reflect on before I hand over to Portia is around Medi-Q, and I really just want to correct the statement. It is false that we have not engaged with Medi-Q since 2021. The most recent communication to them was now at the beginning of October. We have had numerous meetings with them wherein we have asked for data, wherein they confirm with us that the quality of the products that they repurpose still meets the requirements. They have not been able to give us that data. And in the absence of that data, we cannot authorize that they proceed because it puts the lives of the public at risk. They have products such as catheters that they have started to repurpose. And you need to make sure that those are compliant because these are products that are inserted in a person's body. So we have engaged with them. And as I say, the most recent communication is a letter actually that we issued to them was as recent as beginning of October. I'm then going to hand over to Portia to talk to Codeine as well as to talk to the priority review process.
Thank you, CEO. Good evening, honorable members. I'll start with the response to the Codeine matter. Yes, indeed, this was also an issue for us as the regulator, where in September 2019, we started to conduct a review of the, you know, whether to schedule, reschedule or upschedule the codeine in light of the concerns on the misuse and abuse of this codeine-containing medicines. What we did was that we requested for sales data, that is for domestic import and export of all codeine-containing preparations for the time period of January 2018 to January 2019 from the industry. We did that in December 2019. And the takeaway points from this analysis was that there wasn't a large increase in manufacturer reported sales volumes between this period. However, there was a high proportion of the sales volumes, this which was attributable to small number of manufacturers and that specific codeine-containing medicines. These were dominated by the Atcodols, Bronclear with codeines, the Mibulin, and the manufacturer sales were predominantly to wholesalers and final purchasers, that is the community pharmacies and hospitals, with a small proportion to authorized prescribers and the state. So there are concerning signals that individual final purchasers, which are the community pharmacists, could be responsible for disproportionate volumes of purchase. What we did, we had Bronclear with codeine, which was on the top list, and Gauteng province had over 90% consumption rate. And we started our investigations in the Gauteng province, and we wanted to ascertain if there was leaks in the supply chain to illicit market, and also to collate information to guide on appropriate action that would be needed. And our investigations were throughout the supply chain sector, including manufacturers, wholesalers, community pharmacists, clinics, including prescribing doctors. And what we also did, we had several meetings with the manufacturer of Bronclear with codeine, and where we reviewed consumption data and also requested control of production quantities. And we also filtered the top 20 consumers and flagged those, and we allocated them for investigations. What we did was that we had unannounced inspections, which took place since December 2021. And we also had several meetings with the producers of the active pharmaceutical manufacturer. And what we also found out is that with their follow-up meeting that happened in June 2022, there was a significant decline in the 2022 production demand compared to the past 2 years that we have noted. This was also attributed to SAPRA interventions. And we also had meetings with wholesalers. We had webinars with the pharmacy communities, the SAPC, Pharmacy Council, PSSA, civil societies, the recovering users, pharmacy industry reps, and so forth, including the Codeine Care Initiative groups, you know, to talk to this issue of abuse. And from those investigations that we did, those that were found guilty were reported to the Pharmacy Council and to the SAPS for further investigation and action. So this is what we did with regards to with Codeine. So which one is the next one, CEO?
A priority review, and if you can keep the responses brief, Portia, as we're running out of time.
Okay, thank you. As a regulator, we put together a mechanism that will help respond to the public health needs and also respond to the burden of the disease in the country, looking at those products that will be containing or that will be used for HIV, that will be used for cancer, that will be used for TB, and also the vaccines. And this process has really made a great improvement with regards to the registrations of these products, in that it's taking much shorter with the review of once an application has been granted the priority review status. Yes, CEO, I'll stop there.
Thank you very much, Portia. We'll now then take, and I hope we've covered all the questions around that. We'll take the HR questions, and I'll make some few comments, and my colleague, Mr. Gordon Tagatu, will come in. I just want to talk to, there was a question around funding, how we've received the funding that we spoke about for capacitation. The bulk of it has been through the National Department of Health and Global Fund. A number of you may be aware that the Global Fund funds a lot of programs in the country through the National Department of Health. And so we've been able to secure funds over that instrument with the Department of Health. There was a question around, in the terms of staff satisfaction, how staff reacts to attitudes of the executives. I'm not clear on that one. So yeah, maybe Gordon can speak to that, because it's quite a vague question for me. But Gordon, do you want to comment on retention strategies? Do you want to comment on the Section 197 process and our plans around staff satisfaction? Thank you.
Thank you very much, CEO, and good evening to Honorable Chair and Honorable Members and the Board of SAPRA, including you, CEO. I'll start with the retention strategy. First of all, employees need to be engaged with. So the CEO of SAPRA has regular engagements with employees. They need to have an idea where the organization is going. We know where it comes from and what we need to achieve and where we are right now. In addition to that, as part of the retention strategy, we make sure that the employee value proposition is understood, and therefore activities like allowing employees to have the hybrid remote working arrangement is also part of the retention strategy, because these days we're moving with the times. We don't want people to behave the way they did before the COVID lockdowns. Therefore, by allowing employees to work virtually on certain days of the week, That is part of the retention strategy. And also promoting employees within the organization when there's opportunities. You give the first preference to the qualified, meeting the minimum requirement of the position to internal before you even go outside. That becomes one part of the strategy involved in retention. And again, I'll go back to the engagement with the CEO when the employees ask questions and they come with recommendations and suggestions. Those are listened to and therefore actioned, and they can see the action. And when it comes to the transferred employees from the National Department of Health to SAPRA, we had 196 employees that were transferred under Labor Relations Act, Section 197. Those employees are made up of employees with like 40 years service in the public service, all the way up to the most youngest transferred employee would be like 5 years. So those employees, out of the 196, right now we have around 180 because others went on retirement. And what happens is they have to understand the new culture, because you're taking a culture of individuals coming from the public service, the one that is built for SAPRA, as well as from employees who are recruited from the market in South Africa. So at the end of the day, the 196 employees, we did have to transfer them away from the PESAL public service payroll system into the SAGE. It was not 100% smooth, but it happened, and all the issues and concerns on certain benefits that are within the government. And now we, because according to Section 97 of the Labor Relations Act, employees cannot be worse off. But at this moment, all those steps that need to be followed have been followed. And when it comes to employee satisfaction, I'll link it to the survey. We had employee satisfaction survey 2020-2021, and we had recommendations. And out of that, during the survey, 60% of the employees participated, and the recommendations that came from the survey got implemented. And for instance, you will note that as part of satisfaction, when employees have been working, simple thing as a desktop computer for 50, 20 years, and then the next thing you give them laptops, you train them how to use these laptops, it changes their life, because now they understand the difference of telecommuting, which is virtual and remote working, because now they're no longer working with the desktop. And also, which was very exciting for me to see, we had employees who've been working in the organization for more than 20 years, who are in admin. They had to fly over from Cape Town to Pretoria to learn about computers, because some of them were working with hard copy files only. And now, because we've introduced these computers, and now they're working in this new way of doing things. In addition to that, I'll also highlight the fact that in the organization, everyone from any level, we can tell you the pillars of the organization, that is safety, efficacy, and quality, including performance. So overall, if you look at it all, at the end of the day, listening to the employees, we know there are challenges that need to be addressed, and we listen to what they have to say, and where we cannot, we explain why not. I will submit at that point. I'll take anything that I might have missed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gordon. I'll take the questions on legal matters. I may not have all the numbers tonight, but in terms of the cases that are before the courts, there is the ivermectin case. Again, we have issued our statement in terms of our position, which is very much aligned with the court ruling and decision, that we will continuously monitor the data. And as we get the data, we will then communicate with the public. And there was a communication to this effect about a few months ago, but that matter is still with the courts. We also have two matters with the courts on the vaccines, largely the Pfizer vaccine. One matter, we've received feedback recently that it will be withdrawn by the applicant, and there's one matter that is continuing. But I'm happy to provide a detailed report on this to make sure that you have an extensive list. In terms of the number of arrests, again, I can't say offhand. We work here with the South African Police Services. And when then the matters are finalized, they then make certain arrests. You may have seen some in the public, particularly regarding to COVID-related products, but I'm also happy to come back to you on those numbers. In terms of protests to the regulator and how that links to us saying that we are a globally recognized regulator, compliant with good review practices, the public has a constitutional right to protest. So I don't think we can link to the protest to our functioning and how we fare at a global stage, because they look at our regulatory processes. If the public is unhappy with the decisions that the regulator makes, they definitely have their constitutional right to protest. But also even within our Medicines Act, we do have a section that says if an individual is aggrieved or not in support of a decision that is made by the regulator, they can appeal. So, we don't mind, such practices, but we need to ensure, as I said earlier, that what we do is evidence-based. And this is what the global standard then demonstrates. I'll move then to the medicine shortages. Indeed, we have been, we were made aware a few weeks ago around the yellow fever vaccine. We did our part in terms of ensuring that we fast-tracked the lot release. So what happens is the yellow fever vaccine is imported into the country. When it arrives, we have to scrutinize it and take it through a rigorous quality assessment. And because of the shortage that we had at the time, we reviewed it quite quickly and indicated with the applicant that we will then continuously monitor. We haven't had any new applications for a yellow fever vaccine that has been submitted to SAHPRA. In terms of morphine, indeed, we also are aware of that matter, and that I think there's a single supplier in the country. I just want to clarify that as a regulator, we cannot get involved in kind of market dynamics, right? We only deal with what is then being provided to us. And then when we are asked around from a regulatory perspective, our role is to ensure that wherein there's a shortage, we fast track the regulatory review, but we cannot get involved in the market dynamics. And then lastly, on the matters of how SAHPRA was established and sponsors, just to say SAHPRA is a Schedule 3A public entity, and hence we're sitting here today to report to Parliament, right? So that's how it was established. It was established as per the Medicines Act that we've made reference to. In terms of our funding, again, we're very transparent about this. You will see it in our annual report, the most recent one for 2021 that has been published and we've shared with yourselves today. And you will see a lot of detail in the annual report in terms of what we receive from the National Treasury, what we raise through the fees that we charge. These are fees that are gazetted. So again, there's transparency around that. And also we declare any funding that we receive, whether it's in-kind funding, we have declared that, and whether it is funding directly coming to SAHPRA, we have declared that. And those are the practices that enable us then to get this unqualified audit opinion, because we're transparent and we've got mechanisms to report and to manage that. So in terms of where we've received our funding, as I said, National Treasury fees, but also for specific projects, we have, as I've indicated earlier, indicated that we have funding from the Global Fund through the Department of Health. Even in the past, they funded the backlog project through the department. We also had CHAI, the Clinton Health Access Initiative, that funded also the backlog project. There's a number of other projects that they are funding us. And also we have the Gates Foundation. One of the things that we made sure that we put in place to ensure that there is no conflict of interest or any even perceived conflict of interest, we've got a policy that says any funding we receive has to comply with that policy. And so this is a review that we apply with any funding that comes through. We review the contracts in detail and ensure that we are compliant with that policy. This, again, we report to our board through the Risk Audit and Governance Committee. Thank you, Chair. I think I've covered all the questions.
Thank you very much, Dr. Semete, and your team. I think we certainly have. I'm going to give just 30 seconds to your chair of the board to say a few words, and then we're going to close this meeting. Thank you very much for those replies.
Thank you, Honourable Jacobs, and thank you to the CEO for those answers. But thank you for the questions. I hope that we have answered, but we'd be very happy to provide additional information as required. I think the one thing with the kind of probing questions that we're getting, it's very clear, A, that there's a huge interest from the portfolio committee in this field. But secondly, I think it reflects the importance of medicines regulation in its entirety. And I'm going to reinforce this. A regulatory authority in medicines regulation has to be independent and only look at the evidence. As the CEO said, we mustn't get involved with the commercial market. We don't get involved with the pricing. That belongs to the Department of Health. We don't do the research ourselves. Our role is to be the regulator and say, have you done all that you should do as an applicant? And having done that, is what we're seeing still safe? And so there are two sides to this, and it is for all of the products that we govern. We have got further to go, but I would like to say that the board is very committed. This is the first year of a new board, some old members, some new members. A lot of focus has been given to governance and a lot of commitment, as you can see from the attendance at this meeting from the board. But I think the board has huge confidence, as you've seen in the executive team. We do have problems, we know that, and we are going to continue to grapple with them. But we really have come a very long way, and we'd be very happy to continue to engage with the portfolio committee as you require. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, and I agree with you all heartedly. And you need to stay steadfast as you have. I'm sure you will continue to do that, and we wish you well. Honourable members, that brings us to the end. Just a reminder for tomorrow, 2 o'clock, 1400 hours, National Department of Health, APP. So be prepared for that and have a wonderful evening. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Good evening.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you to everyone.